Hi, I'm Ash from the Wizard's Respite. I'm here with my co-host, Zachariah from OMG, and we're going to be talking about TTRPG games that we like, the things that we like about them, things that we think maybe they could do a little bit better, and just kind of chatting about the system overall. The first thing we're going to be doing, the first game we're going to be covering, is The Last Tea Shop. It's one that we had a live stream of, I've done a deep dive review of, we've both done, you know, actual plays of, Zachariah is going to be launching or showing us his deep dive pretty soon too. And we're really excited about this game. We're really excited to talk about it. The mechanics are extremely unique. It's a solo TTRPG where you take on the persona of a tea shop owner on the edge of life and death, giving one last cup of tea to souls as they move to the great beyond. It's a very haunting game. I think I say that 1,000 times, and I absolutely love it. Zachariah, how are you feeling?
First of all, super excited to be here on the first episode of Sanctorum, Wizard's Respite Sanctorum. I'm so excited. I'm so excited, man. This is going to be a cool show. I'm really excited. We're going to do systems each week back and forth, and I'm just really happy that I get to do this with you until at least you find a better co-host than me.
I think we'll be doing this for quite some time then.
Hopefully. I don't know if that is a compliment on my co-hosting abilities.
It's a compliment.
Or a humble insult of your ability to find another co-host.
No, I think I'm really excited too. I think, you know, you and I have been talking about these games for a little bit now. We did our live stream, and yeah, like, I'm really excited to be working with you on this one. It's going to be a real fun show for everybody.
This is something we've really wanted on our channel for a while, the TTRPG stuff, and the presence. This show is going to just be awesome. But we're here to talk about a game, and that's The Last Tea Shop. I urge everybody to go back and check out Stealth Plug, our streams of The Last Tea Shop. Myself and Wizard's Respite did kind of a weird impromptu two-player version of it over the course of two streams, which was some of the best role-playing I've ever done. And yeah, Last Tea Shop is great. It is technically a solo journaling RPG. You can play it with two players, obviously. And everything Wiz said is right. You kind of like roll up where your tea shop is. You roll up like how your character interacts with the characters that come through. And for me, if I might get into it for a sec as to what I think is amazing about this game, is that I think if you are a person out there who is new to role-playing games, or if you're a person out there who is a veteran of role-playing games and just feels like they want to be better at the role-playing aspect, at the putting themselves in other people's shoes aspect, at the pretending to be somebody you're not aspect, I think this is an imperative play for you. Like, get this game, play through it once, because it really makes you a better role-player. Even if you're just playing it by yourself and writing everything down, like the game kind of says, it really just brings out that like RPG, that role player in you, you know?
Yeah, it exercises those muscles without a doubt. I also, you know, I think I've said this a lot of times on various platforms. I found it to be a great writing exercise. Also, when I played it initially, I was kind of having a little bit of a writer's block. Just kind of one of those moments where I'm frustrated. I needed to get out of my own space, out of my own head, and I started hitting it, and it just draws these ideas out of you. So I also think, you know, as just like going on what you said with the role players and getting drawing it out of you, I think this game also draws writing out of you. If you're a writer, you got writer's block, I can't recommend this game more. It just makes you come up with ideas.
I think what's really cool too that I experienced was I watched, first of all, everybody out there can check out Wizard's playthrough. He wrote them all up. If you're watching this on wizardsrespite.com, He's got them all here. You could check them out. If you're watching this in Old Man Gaming, go to wizardsrespite.com immediately. What are you doing? And check them out there. But one of the things
also, don't forget that I had a very excellent narrator for my.
I love how our podcast first like 5 minutes is just us plugging each other. Oh,
I know, right?
Oh, I wish I had said that differently. I wish I had said that differently. Okay.
Yeah, you know, that's going to get a...
That's going to come back to bite us, ladies and gentlemen.
10 years from now, we've been doing this for 10 years, somebody goes all the way back and is like... Now, to be honest with you, in 10 years from now, I bet we're probably going to have a whole stream of these.
Yeah.
Moments.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 3.5 years in with my YouTube channel, and I have over like some like 5,000 videos up there. It's crazy how much it just kind of compiles. One thing I wanted to say that I love about this game, and I know we need to get into the specifics of the actual system, so I don't want to take too long to that, but, you know, I did narrate Wizards Respite's playthrough because I just love the writing there, and it was something I wanted to try. It was a muscle I wanted to flex. And then I ended up, the game had been so good for me, I had to buy the game. But I never actually, confession time, Spring Villager, if you're listening to this, I apologize ahead of time for this. I never intended to play the game because I really kind of felt like I was going to end up having the same experience as you. And then when I played, like, then I was like, you know what, I'm going to try it. And then I played it, and it was a religious experience for me. Like, it was absolutely like the fact that he does this thing in this game where he gives you these choices, but he doesn't do it so much that the game forces you to write anything. So it leaves you with these factors and then allows your personality to connect the dots in the way that it would connect the dots. And that's how it really inspires, like, my playthrough, which I'm trying to write up to actually put on Wizards Respite if I ever have the time, is completely different from Wizards Respite's playthrough. And that was something that I just adored about this game, that me going through this could have just such a completely different result on every chapter than his.
And then our playthrough together.
Another completely different one. Also. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what's crazy, too, is my character wasn't even like my character in my solo playthrough. Like, it was completely, like, it just, every time you step into this game, it's the same basic choices, but they are presented to you in a way that makes you completely, like, go at it in a completely different way. And that's something that really flexes it for you, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And so, like what you're saying, like, let's talk mechanics
for
a second.
Yeah, let's talk mechanics.
What do you think it is about this game that does that? What's the mechanics in there that makes you so inspired, do you think?
I don't know. I really don't. I think that, so the way it works out there, everybody, is you have these like it's just D6s, and then you kind of randomly decide where your shop is located, and then it kind of like prompts you to kind of describe that. And I think that's really the key, is like the roles are more like, there's never a, you rolled and you beat the bad guy, or you rolled and you found the person. It's, you rolled, here is the setup. You have to do something with that. And I think because it's only ever setups, it inspires you to do this. It also, he also built in this kind of, because the way it works is once you've got the tea shop, you then roll for how many days pass, and depending on how many days pass, is the kind of visitor you get, right?
Right.
And then
right.
And then that visitor usually gives you some sort of token or has some sort of special effect on your dice rolls in the future. And then you make another roll to see the kind of like emotional quantity of the visitor. Like, are they sad? Are they curious? Are they happy?
Yeah.
Are they, you know, that kind of thing. And then you get to like kind of take all those factors, and your brain just, it's like they're feeding you a math equation that your brain just is going to solve immediately. And the minute it solves it, you know the story, and then you write it down. And then every visitor after that is like the ones before are factored into that one, and then all of a sudden you just have this story being built you never thought was going to be built.
Yeah, there's a mechanic in there with your next visitor. Your tea shop owner asks them, "How did you know my last fix? My last visitor." Yep. So now you have to figure out how these guys are linked together, and now you have a whole chain of characters that have just sprung out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And one thing that I thought was kind of interesting that I think may really, for me, I thought really helped with the creative aspect of this, the ability to draw it out of you, was that part of the role when you're finding your next visitor, you find the character, you know, maybe it's a farmer, maybe it's a smuggler or whatnot. But then you find their emotional state and the weather, and it's kind of the same thing. It's, you know, a gloomy day and they're sad, but it's a little bit more elegantly written than that. But it's that emotional thing that I think really helps draw these characters out of you, because you can kind of get their motivation without getting any facts about them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And then all of a sudden, like, a backstory builds in your head. And I think that kind of loops back to what I was saying before. If you're an RPG or trying to, like, kind of understand things a little bit better, or trying to be a better RPGer, that's one thing that this game does, is it puts these ideas in your head. Like, oh, I rolled the baker, and she's sad. And then the minute you hear that, you're like, okay, why is she sad? You know what I mean? And then the other thing that factors in that I absolutely love is, like, your tea shop owner does have a way to kind of influence the characters, and that is they brew them tea. Like, that's the whole point. The person is dead. They are trying to move to the next life, and they have to resolve something before they do. And your tea shop owner, in some way, shape, or form, helps them come to terms with it. There's no combat or anything. They just come in, you brew them a tea, it does a special thing, you have a couple of, like, special abilities, and then that helps them kind of come to terms with, like, their mortality lost, so to speak. And I love the tea shop aspect, too, because I love the idea that, like, it, whenever I'm game mastering, and I'd be interesting to know what you think, whenever I'm doing anything, you know, everybody's like, oh, how do you come up with all these NPCs? And I'm like, they just exist in my head. They always will. They always do. Like, anytime people are like, oh, you have all these wrestling characters, I'm like, these are the wrestling characters. Like, when I do a lot of wrestling RPGs, guys. I'm very into wrestling. But, like, literally when I'm not playing a wrestling RPG, I get slight anxiety because I feel like they're all out of work. And, like, even though they are all fictional and live in my head, like, that's the way it works in my head. So, like, for this, like, it really, like, helps you get into that mindset. It fragments you from the character you're writing for as the tea shop owner and the character you're writing for as the person coming in. And don't get me wrong, I want to talk about the two-player version, two aspect, but just looking at the solo version, like, it allows your brain to start to form, like, it fragments your personality in your brain of, like, okay, now I'm a female baker who's sad, but I'm also this tea shop guy, and now I'm this other guy, this smuggler who, you know what I mean? Like, you get where I'm going with this.
You jump from one to the other to the other, and it forces you to, like, take on these personas. And, like, it works that you know, inspiration muscle a bit. It works your acting, you know, your role play muscle a bit, because, you know, when you're like you were saying, like, a DM, I can't tell you how many times as a DM my characters have just been like, yeah, let's just go and talk to these people. And I had nothing in store for those people, but I had to do it like that. And this is kind of a similar thing, like, except it's more, almost more concentrated. This is the goal of the game, is to be so quick and imaginative on the fly.
Yeah, it really boosts your improv skills like through the roof. And I you're exactly right. Like what game master hasn't experienced that? Why are they talking to this guy for so long? He has nothing to do with the plot. I haven't shown him any reason to do anything with the plot, but here he is, and they're just talking to him. So now I've got now his name is Matt, and he's married. He's got two kids, and he had a rough winter. This really helps you with that. Really helps you like think on the fly with character backstory, which I absolutely love. And as far as the two player goes, that's where the role playing comes in because. I mean, you could watch our streams. It's crazy. Like,
yeah,
we had to play so many characters for each other.
And that was the first time you and I had ever played that game in two-player mode.
Yeah.
With anybody. You know, that was almost even an experiment. We sort of bent the rules a little bit.
We did.
But we still walked in there and came up with two tea shop owners, completely distinct, a whole cast of characters, and ended up with a crazy storyline arc, how they all threaded together in this really mysterious way, which, by the way, I still, like, am blown away by how you pieced that together at the end.
You did the same thing, though. You did the same thing.
Oh, yeah. I guess, yeah, you know, like, there was, I mean, that's the beauty of this game. It makes, you make those links, and like you said, it just pulls, like, it puts it in your head, it pulls it out of you. It just happens. You're not even trying.
Oh, exactly. That's one of the best parts about it is that it builds the story on its own, and then like you get to the end, and I don't know if you agree or not. That was the only way that could have ended. There was no other way. Like by the time you get to that veiled one, it was like this is the end of this story. It has to be the end of this story. It's the only thing that makes sense for everything, and it was the same because what he's talking about, guys. Spoilers. For our stream, like maybe fast forward like 5 minutes if you haven't watched it yet. But my character turned out to be his character's dad, and he was kind of keeping him there to try and get to know him with amnesia. And what was so great is earlier there was a character that my character had met who was like missing her dad, and I just decided she would have been a perfect tea shop owner and to have her come back. Well, Wiz tacked onto that was his character's daughter, and the cycle repeated itself, and like it was so perfect because here I am thinking, oh, I'm the MVP of this, man, I got this locked down, and then Wizard just went one step further, and it's just this story, it just builds off of what you already done, you know?
You can't help but play in that game.
No.
It's just too much, it's just inspiration in a booklet.
Yeah, it really is. And it's cheap too, guys. Like, A, you can get it for free. B, you could pay $5 for the complete edition. And I know I sound like an advertisement right now, but that game is worth it. It's just worth it.
Do it. Do it. Do the, I mean, like, there's no reason not to. It's just a little bit more. And, like, yeah, $5. And you help a indie TTRPG designer out, and this game is so worth it.
Yeah,
like it's worth more than $5. But I mean, yeah, I would suggest anybody to that's interested in TTRPG, role playing, writing. Anybody that loves this field, these sort of things, definitely just go and get the complete edition. And yeah, he's not an affiliate of ours.
He's not. Yeah, we're not getting paid for him. Guy. We're going to do a different system every week, so it's not that. But, I mean, we've talked to him because he's an indie guy, but, like, he's... we're not getting paid by him in any way, shape, or form. I truly think this game makes you a better... And, hell, I'm going to... I have a couple of things that I can't wait till we get to the what would you add to this game section of the story. So I mean, we're definitely not like trying to toot his horn all the way up, but like it makes you a better role player. Like that's my thing, especially when it takes combat out of the mix. Like when you walk into it thinking, oh, there's no fighting, you know what I mean? Like for a person who really wants the action, wants to be the fighting, yeah that might be a little depressing, but at the same time it's kind of freeing because at that point all of the action is in the emotion, and it really helps you become an emotional player or game master.
And you know, that kind of goes back a little bit what you just said to what I was thinking about this being good for writers. You know, if you know, you're struggling a little bit with writing character, writing interpersonal communication or anything like that. Making if you're a DM or a GM and you're trying to craft a character and you're just not feeling it, or you're not, it's just not clicking, you know there's something missing, play this is the kind of thing that really helps a lot with that. It draws it out. It makes you think about all the things that make a person a person. It's really great. So,
and that really helps. You really need that, like game masters. No matter how good your story is, you have to have emotional characters to get your players invested. That means sometimes they've got to be sad. Sometimes you have to reach emotions that you don't normally reach. Sometimes you've got to flirt with your players. Like, that's just part of what it is. And, like, this game allows you to kind of, like, come to terms with that a lot better than just doing it with people. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. Now, a couple of things that regarding some of the mechanics that we didn't actually get to in the live stream. I think we both got to them in our individual plays, was the secret characters.
Yes.
The ones that have a more flushed out background. They have, so in the back of the book, there's a stack of characters to have. They already have a background. They already have their motivations, and they have already have like these special prompts for the tea master. Or the tea shop owner. In my game, it was the tea master.
I almost think of them as like gods or forces, you know? Like the same as the Grim Reaper sort of thing.
Yeah, some kind of elemental or something. And, you know, they're very powerful in the gameplay itself, because they, when you interact with them, they're very much there ready to challenge the team master, instead of the team master just simply asking the wandering spirit questions. They kind of push back, you know, their prompts and setups are asking back. Which then allows you to switch the flip the script a little bit and think in a different way all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know that your sorceress popping up in your solo play was a real turning point for your story. And again, mine isn't published yet, but my story, my solo story, had the astrologer show up. And at its timing, when it showed up, it dictated everything from there on. I was like, oh, okay. Like, it's very interesting.
And it's crazy how it kind of works out that way, because that did, you know, I had one character right before the sorceress. It was a hermit. She was she got a happy emotion.
Yeah.
And then right after that, everything changed. And the next one was the sorceress. That was like, you know, the catalyst and then the explosion, you know, it turned into something else. And it's weird how like this game just naturally flows that way. It just creates these patterns for you, and it's all rolled by dice, but it still works somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. My character had kind of fallen in love with one of the tea shop people who had showed up. And like it just kind of, the story kind of happened organically. And I was like, that was a nice little way station. But the very next character was the astrologer. And I was like, okay, so the astrologer is showing up. Why would the astrologer show up right there? And then it just kind of dawned on me that because he did something wrong, because he got too close to one of them. And that just set it off from there, like his kind of like, because my game was very, very adversarial with the tea shop itself. Like after the first three, he ended up being like, why am I here? What the fuck is going on? I don't want to do this anymore. Like that kind of thing. And, it just created such a, I mean, I'm not going to spoil it because eventually I'm going to write it and put it up. But it created this interest, just a completely different dynamic from your tea shop playthrough that was amazing to me. Just that they were so different, you know. But they both had that like turning point with the named people.
Yeah, yeah. So that's another, I think, pretty cool element that they Spring Villager placed in there. I'll be honest with you, like, I actually have not read almost any of those characters. For one reason, I wanted to be surprised.
Right.
I wanted to roll for it organically, and I wanted to figure it out on the fly. And so I still don't know, you know, what, like, the Hedge Witch says. I know she's in there. I saw her in the list of possible characters. I have no idea what her deal is. And I'm looking forward to the day I find out.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. Like, I have avoided everything but the ones I've read just because after the first one, I was like, I want to kind of do a season two for my guy, like, eventually, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
This is the part of the show that we're going to do some more constructive criticism. We've already talked about the things that we really love about it. We're going to talk about things that, you know, maybe we might tweak a little bit or adjust or expand upon. Obviously, we're doing games that we love. But there's always something that you might you tinker with, or I mean, we're game masters, we're TTRPG fanatics. We love tinkering. That's what we do. So let's talk about tinkering. Let's talk about how we might adjust this game. I mean, we already kind of tinkered a little bit with the two player mode on our live
stream. We did. We tinkered right off the bat. We were early adopters of tinkering.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're like, Spring Villager, we loved your game. We're going to do something completely different.
Do you have, to start off the bat, do you have any ideas or any thoughts of things that you would tinker with or adjust?
I want to say right now, right off the bat, because I am a walking disclaimer, and anybody who listens to my gamer side of the channel knows that. So I'm going to say, this does not mean I do not like the system in any way, shape, or form. This is just me saying stuff. You know what I mean? I just want to make that very clear. I love this game from the ground up. I would do a full once-over of the foraging. So in the game, everybody out there, and actually we skipped this in our playthrough just because it would have just added more to our already massive two-player playthrough. But I think, like, at any one point in time through your playthrough, you can do what's called a foraging chapter. And the foraging chapter is basically you go out to get a material of some sort. Sometimes special things can pop up for you to forage, which is weird. That only really happened to me once in a special way, and I don't want to say how because I don't want to ruin something for Wiz. But
No spoilers.
But foraging, like, happens in this game so you can get some more materials for your tea. And then basically you write a chapter about going out to get the tea. My only complaint right now is that there is nothing to that in the game. There's just, like, a little paragraph that basically says, you go out and get some tea, write about you going out and getting some tea. And ours, like, Wizard's foraging thing, he almost died falling down a mountain repeatedly. Mine, I fought a mythical ram, which is insane, but it got real weird in mine. But what I would love to do is the same kind of treatment from the tea shop setup given to the foraging. I'd like a dice roll, like, and it could be a dice roll of, like, what's the weather like that day? Or a dice roll of how, what is, I would do three dice rolls. I do, what's the weather like that day? I do, what do you have? And just have, like, a bunch of different items, like a piece of rope, a knife, you know, something like that. So what do you have to get the item? And then that's your key part of that chapter. And then I do one more roll, which is, what is the challenge that stands in front of you?
Yeah.
Is it an animal? Is it a cliff? Is it a raging fire? Is it some sort of river you have to cross? Like, and I would do that so that you could prompt, like, some really interesting chapters in that. That'd be my first thing that I'd change. The other thing is just more of those special characters. They're so awesome and interesting. I want like 50 of them. I mean, I don't know how they'd fit into the game, but that's what I want. I want tons of those characters.
Yeah. Oh, I can see all that, actually. I did have to fill in a lot of blanks when I did my foraging expedition. So I can definitely see what you're saying there. And, you know, everything else of this game is those roles that just inspire just a little bit, but this the Foraging Expedition really doesn't, like you said. I would even say, if I would add anything onto what you said at all, would be maybe when you roll for your challenge, have like a series of tables attached to the location of your tea shop. So if it's on the side of a mountain, they have more thematic meanings to that mountainside, or the volcano. You can have a tea shop in a volcano, or on the river. Maybe something like that. But I can definitely see that. Maybe getting that a little bit built up, a little bit more robust mechanics attached to the Foraging Expedition.
Yeah, I mean, the foraging is supposed to be this kind of moment where your tea shop deals with, where your tea shop owner deals kind of with his own shit a little bit. You know, he spends the rest of the game dealing with other people's crap. But at the same time, I kind of want the same amount of prompts that I get from the other characters, or at least somewhere in there, so that it can help me better inform how my tea shop guy is dealing with it. You know what I mean? And I'm not knocking the game. A lot of the ways you could still kind of run it, because usually you're not doing a foraging expedition until you've got a few chapters under your belt. So when you're doing it, you're basing it off their personal experience there. But I kind of feel like you could really like tailor make that with a couple of, you know, tables. But what did you think could be changed or improved? I'm kind of curious.
So one thing that, this is more of a wish list thing. This is something that, you know, maybe the expanded version may have. like, I would love to see a mechanic or a section in the back of the book for expanding your own list of characters. Where you could maybe develop more. You know, I mean, I love these characters so much, and, you know, I want to play the game a couple more times. You know, I'll probably play this game once a year, but having, like, some mechanic in there where I can make my own list, I mean, I guess I could just do that on my own, but at the same time, if, like, just because of the nature of this game and how much like intrinsic like creativity goes into it, I think it would be kind of neat to be able to build your own characters and make an expansion to your list. So that would be my wish list from Spring Villager. If he ever does another expansion for this, that would be the mechanic I'd like to see him try to develop.
I would love that. Or even just like just more books with more roads. You know what I mean? That'd be even better. Like so we've got the dice and the lantern road. Just for everybody who plays, you've got two sides of the coin, dice and lantern road. You can go through the game on either one, and some people make you switch. I would love it if he did like two more roads. You know what I mean? Like Anchor and Pine Tree Road or whatever, but like with a whole nother, you know, group of people. And then it may be really interesting when you get those like switch roads sort of situation, because it's like, okay, which road do you go to? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would be really cool, yeah.
Roll the D4.
No, not the D4s! Not the D4s, please! Anything but the D4s.
Zachariah has a thing against D4s.
I hate D4s. Okay, so here's my thing with D4s. First of all, they don't roll good. I don't care what anybody says. And I'm talking about the normal caltrops, like, triangle things that you would use to, like, take somebody's foot out. Like, they don't roll good. They also will 100% take your foot out. Like, yeah, I mean, if you step on any dice, you're not feeling great. But if you step on a triangle, you got to take off work the next day. Like, it's over. So I hate that. They don't roll good. They're always in, the numbers are always organized in a weird way. So like, it's like, which one is it? Is it four? Is it three? Is it two? I see three numbers here. Why is this so complicated? Like I hate the D4s. It's just, when you roll a dice, there's this satisfying, like it hits whatever you're rolling it on. It bounces a couple of times. Or if you're dropping it in a tower, it plinks down the tower and then it rolls out and it lands on the number, good or bad. With a D4, you do it in your hand and you do this, it lands flat like plop, like a wet turd, and then just sits there. It's the worst. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hijack the whole show and make it about how much I hate D4s. I have a buddy who plays with me. You'll get to know him soon. Philbilly330, he's on the channel often. He hates them. He hates them too.
Yeah.
They are the worst. He's like, I will roll a D8 and divide it in half, please. And I'm like, sure. No problem. D4s suck. I have like three. I hate them. I don't want anything to do with them.
Oh, man.
Sorry, that was a rant.
Zach rant. You happen to be watching this. No expansions with D4.
No D4s, Spring. No D4s. Keep them out. You got a fan for life right here, man. Don't do me with the D4s. There's a game that we're reading right now that we're thinking about playing for our next two-person stream. It's like he wants you to roll 20 D4s. I'm like, who the fuck has 20 D4s?
And maybe. What? Maybe we need to rethink some of those rules a little bit.
What weirdo has 20 D4s in their house? I'm like, if I met somebody with 20 D4s, I'd be like, get out of my group. You are strange. There's something wrong about you. All my red alarms are going off right now. You gotta go. 20 D4s. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. We're gonna have to have a whole episode just on dice at some point.
I'd be all right with
that. Dice goblins out there.
You know, I know we're getting towards the end of the show, but I gotta ask, because every RPGer has their favorite. What's your favorite dice? And I know it's weird because people are like, oh, it's just dice, but every RPGer has a dice, a shape and a side that they're like, I can't wait to roll that.
Okay, I'll be 100% honest. I like my D100. I have a giant orange D100. It's a skull crasher, you know, like the really big golf ball.
Nice.
I love that thing. It thunks. You know, you can't make those small. Or as a when I run a game, if I'm running a game where events like D&D, things are in secret to varying degrees, I love scaring the crap out of my players by dropping this massive, weighty ball on the table and being like, ah, so that just happened.
That's amazing. I'm going to say right now, on our next episode, you have to show that to the camera so people can see that.
Yeah, I'll bring it next time.
Regardless of what game we're doing, you got to bring that.
Yeah. I'll make sure my D100 comes out. How about you? What's yours? What's D20. Your favorite?
D20. I love the D20. Classic. It's got the perfect amount of heft, it rolls the right amount of times. There's nothing better than the 20. Plus, I am a huge homebrewer, obviously, because I try to publish my own games, and it is the maximum amount of variety you can have without it being too much. So, like, when you have a D100, like, you can't have stats of, like, 5 and 6. But at D20,
right,
you can, and the stats will still matter. So you can still have simple stats. The stats will matter, but you have enough variation that the little guy can get the shot in every once in a while. I love the numbers on the D20s. I love it. Every game I've ever made, other than Upper Hand, which might have been why it's only sold 6 copies, has been all about the D20s. All about the D20s.
It's your lucky D20. You got to stick to that lucky D20.
I have so many D20s. So many D20s. I don't know why. Like, every time I'm in a game store, I buy, like, 2 D20s. I won't buy anything else. Just in the loose jar, I'll find, like, 2. Like, oh, these are colors I don't have. D20s. I have a weird obsession with D20s.
I will say, my Skull Crusher is my favorite shape, okay? But if I had to pick my favorite individual dice,
okay,
the lucky dot.
All right.
The one that I always keep in my back pocket, that's my D20, my little black D20. I have had that for I don't even know how long. I bought it in one of those assorted little packs, and I just, it's my go-to D20. Okay.
I play a world
about, this game.
We'll go back to it. I play a World of Darkness game right now. It's all D10s.
Oh, cool.
It just makes me so sad.
Oh, yeah.
It just makes me so sad.
Oh, no. Like,
there's no D20s here. There's no D20s. And I don't have that many D10s. So I'm, like, rolling percentile die with it and stuff.
Yeah.
But, all right, back to the system. Sorry, we went on a dice rant. It's going to happen.
It's inevitable.
Digression's the name of the game.
Okay, so we both agree there's maybe just a couple of things that, you know, we'd like to see a little bit different in the expanded version. But overall, we absolutely love the game.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that you can think of that you want to add to our interpretation or our review here of this game, of our conversation about the game?
I'm not going to lie. The mechanics that he has down right now, I wouldn't change. I love them. Yeah. I think they are the right amount of... I'm looking for a word and I can't find it, but the right amount of kind of like... You don't know what it is, but the right amount of also exactly what it is, you know? And it just, yeah. it just hits that sweet spot. I wouldn't change anything he has right now. I'd only add to it. And that's one of the reasons I'm excited for his next game so much, because I can't wait to see what that is. But, like, yeah, I don't think I'd change it. I don't think I'd change it other than add to it. Just that's the problem with it, is it's there, and you're like, this is amazing. I want to build a castle on it. It's like the strong foundation, but it's just got a shack on it. And I'm like, no, I want a castle on this. I want so many rules I can bathe in them. You know what I mean?
Now,
and like,
do you think though, if there was a castle, that'd be too much for it?
Might be.
Because we love it, but maybe there's a limited of like a diminishing returns on size. I don't know.
You make a good counter, a good counter argument there. I can't necessarily argue that it might be too much. It is a game that leaves you wanting more. I'll say that, and that's not a bad thing. It just does.
No.
It leaves you wanting more, and the only thing I'd
makes
like,
you want to go back there.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It really does. So yeah. Yeah, I'm good. I don't think I'd change anything else other than just adding to it what we already have added to it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, then I think maybe we should talk about our next episode, next game that we're going to be looking
at. Yeah, I'm excited. Now, Wizard can't see this because the way we record, my camera will only work with one program. But I'm going to put up the cover to the screen. This is what it is, because it's my turn to pick. Wizard decided it was my turn to pick. This is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness by Palladium Books. This game is from, like 85, I think? Something crazy like that. This game, first game I ever game mastered right here. That's why I picked it. And I still have the original book that I bought when I was, like, 13. So I'm super excited to talk about this game. Super excited! That Wizard has given me the opportunity to talk about this game.
I love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, like, I
kindred
think everybody
spirits,
from
man.
Our generation does.
Yeah.
What's that?
Kindred spirits, man. Kindred spirits.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah, I mean, like, that was childhood. I had every single like turtle action figure and their variations, and they were always, you know, going on adventures when I was a child. And I've never played this game. I didn't even know it existed until you showed me it. I am so excited to kind of jump into this one and do a little bit of a deep dive myself. And
maybe one of our two-player streams has to be this.
Do you think it functions well for a two-player sort of setup?
I think I can make it function well for two-player setup.
Anything will function well for our two-player setup.
I was about to say, I think we can make anything work. I think we can make anything work. Okay. Yeah, super excited. Super excited to do it.
Okay, so, like, this has been a lot of fun, but I think we're starting to wrap it up. So I just want to talk real quick about what the Wizard's Respite is, what we do. I run this site that is everything TTRPG. Right now I'm starting to focus a little bit more on the industry side, on content creators, and I have some sales data that I'm starting to put up there. If you're into TTRPG, which if you're watching this you are, I really suggest taking a look at it. If you're a content creator, take a look at it and get an idea of what, you know, the market for our community, our products are. You can do that at thewizardsrespite.com. That's a big thing that I want to try and be getting out there right now. Zachariah, do you have anything you want to throw out there?
Well, definitely I want to plug the wizardsrespite.com. Go check that shit out. It's awesome. He's our unofficial TTRPG partner here at Old Man Gaming, where you can check out, we have tons of gaming videos, Let's Plays, streams, podcasts, and of course, now we're doing TTRPG stuff. So all the stuff you can watch through Wizards Respite that is video form comes from my channel. So don't watch it here. Watch it on Wizards Respite, because then you're giving him the view, you're giving us the view, everybody wins. It's a nice little synergy we got going on. As far as what I'd like to plug specifically, I do want to just plug two big things. I'm going to keep my plugs to tabletop role-playing game stuff when we're doing this show. So number one, we are 6 chapters into A Womanizer's Guide to Axiom. Myself and my partner in Axiom Games LLC played this game years ago before we even had a company, for like about 5 years, just in text based over Facebook. It was one of our favorite things we've ever played, and we collected all of it. We took all the stats out and we're rewriting it kind of as short stories. Wizards Respite is posting them. I'm also doing the narration. Mark is doing the voice for his character because I was the game master on that. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. It's been a headache because apparently when you're playing a role-playing game, you don't care about tense. So that was real real rough rewrites. But still, we're 6 chapters in. I'm sorry, 5 chapters in, 6 chapters coming next week. And yeah, that's been a lot of fun. The other thing, March 30th, mark your calendars. I know that's a little bit earlier. That's going to be the day myself and this man over here. I always point the wrong direction because of the mirror effect. But we are going to be doing our next 2-person role-playing game live stream where we actually play something. It's going to be something we haven't decided what yet. We haven't decided what. We have a couple of games we're thinking about, but we haven't decided what. We did last T-Shop 2 episodes of it last month. So really excited to play this again. I had a lot of fun doing this. I think this is going to be a lot of fun this time. That's it for me. That's all I'm going to plug. Obviously, check out everything we have to offer. That's it. That's all I can ask for.
Yeah. That's great.
Don't play with D4s if you're a TTRPG.
should we end it there? That was a pretty good ending.
I think that's a great one. We'll be back next week.